Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. It's a great day to be alive. Got your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Who is Karl Marx? How do his ideas impact our country? What is the latest of the woke military? And more. I love hearing from you. Email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. And subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Open up your podcast app. Type in Charlie Kirk Show and subscribe in the upper right-hand corner. Get involved with Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. Turning Point USA is the battleship to retake America culturally and educationally. That is tpusa.com, tpusa.com. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody, here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Charlie, you're always talking about Marxists. I hear this a repeated theme. Marxist, Marxist, Marxist. What is a Marxist? What did Karl Marx actually believe? My 19-year-old at the University of Alabama is being taught by her professors that Marx was smart, profound, and visionary. Help me out here. Who was Karl Marx? Great question. So Karl Marx is without a doubt one of the most influential people ever to live. There is no questioning that. So Karl Marx is interesting. He was a radical student, part of the young Hegelian group at the University of Berlin. Now, Hegel is a very complicated topic, very deep. He wrote a book called The Phenomenology of Spirit. Hegel basically stole Christian eschatological framing, end times, and created a theory of history. So whenever you think of Hegel, think of history, that things are constantly unfolding towards an inevitable perfection. It goes through this series of thesis and antithesis. It creates a synthesis. We talk about this a little bit, actually, in an upcoming podcast, which is why you have to subscribe to the Charlie Kirk Show podcast with James Lindsay, who understands the topic far better than I do. I have a surface understanding of it. He has a deep, complex understanding of Hegel. Hegel was profound, though, because he got people to basically buy into the idea that history is constantly unfolding, that we're on a journey towards inevitable utopia. Now, that is against Christianity in the sense that our actions or the state actions are not going to bring us towards utopia, but we do believe that eventually that the people who give their lives to the Lord will end up living in paradise, living in heaven. So Karl Marx is a leader of the young Hegelians. He actually got kicked out of a group. Actually, the university refused to publish a paper of his in 1842 because he was too radical. So then he met this guy, Engels, which of course is the lesser known counterpart, Friedrich Engels. And in 1848, they published a very famous book called The Communist Manifesto. So that actually is where we get the term communist from, is from Marx and Engels. Now, they also came up with the term capitalist. Capitalist is actually a slur. It was meant to be a pejorative, meaning all you care is about the flow of capital. Now, what's tricky about Marx is that Marx was actually right about several things. I wouldn't say Marx was right about a lot, because those are all relative statements. But Marx was correct in certain observations of human behavior. Most specifically, Marx was right about what could best be described as the Pareto principle or the Matthew principle. For all of you devotees to Jordan Peterson, you know exactly what the Pareto principle is. Now, the Pareto principle is fascinating. The Pareto principle is something that is true across any discipline. It's across music, across sports, across restaurants, across wealth distribution. And basically, the Pareto principle states that for any outcome, roughly 80% of all the consequences or benefits come from 20% of the people. Said differently, 20% of the people, otherwise known as the vital few, drive forward the progress and the benefits. So what does that actually mean? That means regardless of how hard you try, if you have any form of a market, any form of private property, you're going to have hierarchies designed, not designed, but eventually as the outcome. Some people are going to work harder. Some people are going to save better. It is known as the Pareto principle. And so you dive into this, by definition, you're going to have otherwise known as structural inequality. Now, what Marx realized is that this is baked in. You're not going to be able to avoid it. Now, his conclusion was totally wrong, is therefore we must tear down that system. How is it fair that 20% of the people, the vital few, are able to get 80% of the outcomes? So let's just say this differently. 20% of all, let me say that, 80% of the most popular musical compositions, movies, plays, dramas, sporting awards, Super Bowls, World Series are dominated by 20% of the people. It gets even crazier than that. And this is the number just off the top of my head, is that 1% actually end up getting 90% of the 80%. So it gets even thinner and it goes even shorter the more you go down the Pareto principle. So anyway, Marx didn't articulate it exactly like that, but essentially Marx said there's a huge problem here. The problem is that over time, a smaller and smaller group of people are going to be able to get more and more stuff. And by definition, they're exploiting people to do that. So what Marx introduced into the entire international conversation was a framing of the oppressor versus the oppressed. But he did it strictly in economic terms. He framed it the bourgeoisie versus the proletariat was the way which his original framing. Marx was critical of being able to own private property, which originally was an idea that Plato even conjectured. And Rousseau then took up, the French philosopher who spent a lot of time in Geneva, who himself was a massive hypocrite. If you send your kid to college, they're going to learn a lot from Rousseau. So Marx really incubated a lot of these ideas. I don't think Engels gets enough credit for this, but Marx was right that in a market, you're going to have winners and you're going to have losers. What Marx was wrong about, though, is that are the losers as big of losers as you actually think they are? Because Marx would think that if someone has a big house and they traded for that house, that you must have exploited your way to get up there. That you weren't able to have a good product or an idea, that you didn't invent something meaningful, that you weren't able to take a contributing risk to the world that all of a sudden people wanted to have. For example, you created a movie that people wanted to see that enriched their life, or you created a car that was allowed them to be transported. That he looked at markets simply and strictly and sloppily, might I add, through a prism that if you were able to obtain wealth, then you what? Capitalized, there's that word capital, capitalized via capital on somebody else's labor. Doesn't matter if they get paid, doesn't matter if they want to do it, doesn't matter if they find it enriching, they are being oppressed, but they don't even realize it. So Marx wrote in the Communist Manifesto, amongst other places, let the workers of the world unite. That's kind of his phrase. Anytime you see it, that's a Marxist phrase. But Marx went so much deeper than that. Marx wrote on and on and on. And again, his most popular book, actually, not that, that's not the right way to put it. His most popular book is the Communist Manifesto. His most powerful book is Das Kapital. And so the famous phrase was, workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains. Now that is a hearkening back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who said, men are born free, but they spend the rest of their lives in chains. Now, of course, Karl Marx also said religion is the opiate of the masses. Democracy is the road to socialism. Marx was across the board indicting what we would consider to be core tenets of Western civilization. Now, what's important is he took that kind of Hegelian ideology, that Hegelian philosophy, that kind of idea of the march through history, this journey towards the arc of our existence, towards an eschatological utopia. And eventually Marx argues that the last phase of communism, after the government takes over everything, is actually the government taking over nothing, that we'll live in harmony, that we'll get back to our romantic, ideal, childish, infant-like way of living. But the way we must do that is we must first destroy the capitalist hierarchy, private property, the ability to trade, exist in markets. We must tear it down all through the workers. So Marx was able to employ all of this. And Marx, of course, inspired Hitler in some sense. He inspired the Soviet Union. Largely, Marx was very, very revered in Leninist type of ideology. Marx inspired Mao. Marx inspired North Korea. Marx inspired Castro. But Marxism, this idea of oppressed versus oppressor, that framework, that kind of dialectic, that tension, was then taken up by the identity politics type who ran the Marxist school in Frankfurt, Germany in the 1930s and 40s, and they brought it to America and they broadened it outside of economic terms. Look, I love Good Ranchers, and I know a lot of you love them too. And do some good by helping feed kids who are facing hunger and food insecurity. Good Ranchers is on a mission to donate 100,000 high-quality meals to young kids who often go unfed or end up malnourished from poor access to nutritious food. You can join this campaign by ordering a box of 100% American meat. Every order contributes meals to the cause and makes a massive difference in the lives and minds of these young kids. If you didn't know, Good Ranchers is a fabulous company. I love them. I know them so well. They're an award-winning food delivery service that brings 100% American meat and seafood to your door. They source the best of American farms so you can get the highest quality food possible and trust you're feeding your family every time. When they send us Good Ranchers to our office, smiles populate across the landscape. A good meal goes a long way for anyone, especially a child. They need protein, vitamins, and nutrition to help them grow. So fill your plate while you fuel their minds with Good Ranchers. So go to goodranchers.com/Kirk to join the movement today. You get $30 off your order, free shipping, and donate life-changing food to kids in need. Giving back never tasted or felt so good. Let's help them hit or pass their goal of 100,000 meals donated. All we have to do is change the way we buy meat. Stop going to the grocery store, and you can get better quality, better flavor, and more impact with Good Ranchers. So don't think twice. Go to goodranchers.com/Charlie or use my promo code Kirk to claim your $30 offer of any box of beef, chicken, or seafood. Again, it's the Back to School Giving Back campaign. School is right around the corner, and many kids do not know where their meals are coming from. Every order with Good Ranchers fills plates and fuels minds. Do your part. Do good this month by helping them reach their goal of 100,000 high-quality meals. $30 off your order plus free shipping. They're the fastest growing meat company in America. They're 100% American meat to your door. So go to goodranchers.com/Kirk. I want the Charlie Kirk Show to donate the most meals of everyone. Go to goodranchers.com/Kirk. That is goodranchers.com/Kirk. So essentially what ended up happening then is Karl Marx's ideas germinated throughout the European Academy, and a very clever, sinister person by the name of Herbert Marcuse in the 1930s and 40s was overseeing the Frankfurt School and then took those ideas and transplanted them into America. But it wasn't just the Marxist theory on economics. It was beyond that. It wasn't just oppressor versus oppressed and bourgeoisie and proletariat. No, instead it was applying that kind of theory of Marxist class struggle, because Karl Marx was so focused on class struggle, the owner of a business and the workers of a business in particular. We must understand the times of which Karl Marx wrote this, because all philosophy is a reflection of the times and the issues. Karl Marx wrote this during the height of the Industrial Revolution, when Europe was becoming widespread industrialized and people were making the transition from the farms to the factories. And Marx started to see the, let's just say, unexpected externalities. People that were getting black lung, people that were dying at work, people that were being overworked, child labor. Those were some very legitimate concerns. But instead of talking about improving what was a massive standard of living increase in the mid-1800s, he just throws out the entire system altogether, pairs it with Hegelian and Rousseauian ideology, and says this construct needs to be thrown apart. Whenever you hear construct, that is a Marxist term, just to keep your ear out. So then Marcuse takes this and says, ah, I love this idea. Again, it was over many decades. It wasn't like overnight. And he says, why can't we apply this to all walks of life? Apply this to feminist movements. Apply this to race movements. Apply this to everything. That the Marxist theory of struggle, oppressor versus oppressed, it goes everywhere. And so where he was able to hit it perfectly is the introduction of critical theory. Now, he himself, I don't think, ever used that term. I could be wrong. But it was a critical lens on anything that might exist. And then there were other disciples as well, Jacques Derrida and Michel Foucault, who were just straight out postmodernists. which is that we need to now break ourselves of the shackles of modernity and challenge basically everything. Deconstruct it. Your opinion is the truth. You have your truth. There is no the truth. That is a white supremacist, colonialist, heteronormative belief system. So how does that now manifest in our life? Well, in a variety of different ways. So I'm going to play you a couple of clips here. Now, this young lady is being interviewed by Peter Boghossian. It's cut 158 to get it ready. Peter Boghossian is an atheist liberal. I'm actually on great terms with Peter Boghossian. I want to have Peter Boghossian come on our program. I think we actually hosted one of his events at Turning Point USA at Northern Arizona University. Peter Boghossian's a very smart guy, despite our metaphysical differences of opinion. And he does hate the woke, and we're on great terms on that. He loves free speech. I think Peter Boghossian wants a free society, and he's very fun, and he's brilliant. He's wickedly smart, runs laps around me on certain topics that I couldn't even comprehend. And he has a new project where he's just going out and interviewing people. It's called the Reverse Q&A, where he asks people about their experiences, about what's happening on the front lines. So let's play cut 158.
Capitalism cannot function without inequality.
Yeah, that's right.
In order for capitalism to function, there must be inequality. And because America has such a racist history, that inequality becomes racial inequality. So,
so it's not
inherently. Yeah. But I think what it has progressed to be has turned.
There are kind of levers behind the system keeping minorities down.
Yeah, absolutely. Mainly through the form of policies.
You know, that's not an isolated opinion. These are the future leaders of America that'll run the FBI, DOJ, Goldman Sachs, CIA, all of that. But I'm not here to attack her at all. You know, I'm just here to criticize her ideas. I do want to give her credit, though. She articulated Marx very well. That was not a clumsy way. That was really good. It's actually exactly what I talked about very succinctly. The inevitable end of capitalism is inequality. But then she blends it. Did you see what happened there? She blended old Marx with new Marx. Pretty impressive young lady. She's on the ball. I mean, she's listening in class. She's taking notes. She's writing papers because she took first what was an economic complaint, right? That was original Marxist. It ends in economic inequality and then inequality. And then say, but then therefore there's all this racial inequality. Wait, hold on a second. I thought we were talking about class, not race. That's the new Marxist. That's Derrida, Foucault, and Marcuse. She did it very succinctly in 14 words. She's probably going to run some government agency and will try to imprison half the country one day. I hope not. But the point is, that's the kind of mind virus that infects our academy. What are the implications? We're going to continue on with a clip from AOC and another clip of Peter Boghossian on campus as we continue our Ask Me Anything episode. A little more of a philosophical approach today. Bad philosophy ends in catastrophe. Large asset managers are using your money to advance toxic social and political agendas. They tell American energy companies to drill less and frack less to fight global climate change. Bunch of garbage. That's not their job. But here's the good news. It's your money, not theirs. That's why Strive recently launched a new U.S. energy index fund. Vivek Ramaswamy is behind this. Great American. He's on our program a lot. And they have it now trade in the New York Stock Exchange called Drill, D-R-L-L. That's D-R-L-L. Strive mandates U.S. energy companies to drill more, to frack more, and to do whatever allows them to be most profitable over the long run. The bigger they get, the more powerful their voice will be. Visit strivefunds.com today and buy D-R-L-L on the New York Stock Exchange. You have to check it out. If you want to be able to get behind the good guys and bash the woke companies, that's strivefunds.com. It's a way that possible you could make money. It might go up. It might go down. That's what investing is. But at least it's consistent with your values. Strivefunds.com, D-R-L-L. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses carefully before investing. For a prospectus or summary prospectus with this and other information about the fund, please call 855-427-7360 or visit their website at strivefunds.com. Read the prospectus or summary prospectus carefully before investing. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. The Strive ETFs are distributed by Quansar Distributions, LLC. These ideas starts with Marx, and it goes to Marcuse. It goes to Derrida. It goes to Foucault, and it just spreads. And then it becomes policy. So it's not just bad ideas. And this is what's so important for people to realize. is that this is not just bad ideas of kids that are saying this stuff on college campuses, because I hear this from conservatives. And I wrote this in the book, The College Scam. Oh, yeah, these ideas have always been around. First of all, they have not been this bad. Second of all, they're now implementing them as actual actionable policy in our country. So just one more. This is cut 159. Young lady at Peter Boghossian's event. Play cut 159.
Poor minorities. I'm a minority. I'm Hispanic. And I am a woman. And I'm like, I'm not a victim. And I don't need you to feel sorry for me. We don't need social justice. And they keep telling, and they keep saying, oh, yes, we do, because we're a social justice school. That is what we do. And if you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. You can leave. An advisor, listen, told me this. I told her, I'm not a bad person. I actually care about the education system and getting, you know, getting, making sure that minority students actually get into STEM. That's my mission and my purpose. And I'm like, I'm not a bad person. You know what she told me? She told me this. Oh, we don't know that yet.
Yeah, we don't know that yet. If you do not subscribe to the critical race theory orthodoxy, regardless of your skin color, they are the administers, of what's considered to be good and not good. As James Lindsay perfectly put it, Dr. James Lindsay, we have an upcoming episode with him. We had a conversation at the Turning Point USA Great Reset event. Our Turning Point USA team did such a great job. As James Lindsay perfectly put it, he said, critical race theory is calling everything racist till you control it. And it's the best summary. It is a takeover mechanism. CRT, post-structuralism, transgenderism. It is a military strategy. You could call it the fifth column to take over what already exists so that they get to call the balls and strikes. They get to be the moral referees of society. They get to be in power and you get to be displaced. They get to be monarchs and rulers, and you get to be plebs and serfs. So how does this manifest into policy? Yolanda from Oklahoma. Charlie, I'm so worried about what's going on with our military. I live in Enid, Oklahoma. There's a big military base right nearby. I've actually visited there, had a great speech at the local church there. Is it true that our military is becoming woke? I'm hearing about it in local restaurants. I'm hearing about it with people that are serving in the Air Force. What is going on? Please help me understand fact from fiction. I'm very worried. So yes, all these ideas, starting with Marx, applied all this. Now it's in our military. And I have not heard enough from our Republican, soon-to-be majority about what they are going to do, what they are willing to do to shut down the government and stop continuing resolutions to ensure that this idea pathogen, which is more dangerous than the Chinese coronavirus, gets out of our military. So we're going to play some tape here. We're going to go one by one. First is this. This is Lieutenant General Richard Clark, the first black U.S. Air Force Academy superintendent, talking about why diversity is so important in the armed forces, saying it will, if we don't have diversity, it will weaken us. Oh, really? How does diversity, not that it's a bad thing, but I'm just wondering, how is that an elemental and fundamental component? Why is that a necessary focus of an ingredient into beating the Chinese at war? What about it? What about diversity makes you stronger? I'm not saying it makes you weaker. I want an explanation. Besides the fact that it's a nice bumper sticker and you can repeat it over and over again and people are afraid to ask you this question because they're going to be called racist, I want to know specifically and concretely how this makes us more likely to defend ourselves against the Iranians and the Chinese. Play cut 160.
We are getting more diverse. And if you're going to look out, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, if we don't start really opening up the entire population for us to draw from, to draw talent from, and there's talent there, we limit ourselves, and it will weaken us. And it's not just the military. It's across all segments of society.
He talks like a trained Marxist. All segments of society. Yeah, if we don't change the way we've been doing things as the greatest military in the history of the planet, it's going to weaken us. 161, this is our military new diversity and inclusion outreach plans coming for officers and recruiting efforts. They're not worried about defeating the Chinese at sea, defeating the Chinese with their new technology. No, the focus of the military now is a college campus. They want everyone to look different, but think the same. Cut 161.
Air and Space Force officer commissioning programs are developing new diversity and inclusion outreach plans by the end of this month to reach updated applicant pool demographic goals. The effort was directed by Secretary of the Air Force Frank Kendall. He says it's imperative the composition of the military services better reflect the nation's highly talented, diverse, and eligible population. Kendall added the outreach plans continue to progress towards achieving a force more representative of the nation while leveraging diversity to enhance the Air and Space Forces.
People ask all the time, Charlie, would you serve in the military? You know, would you recommend serving in the military? And I'm like, I have not served in the military. I'm very thankful for people who have served in the military. So I'm not one to talk, but I will say, talking to people that are in the military, they say, stay out. Stay out right now. That is what they're saying. And by the way, enrollment numbers are showing. They are down 13%. The latest military enrollment numbers are down dramatically. They're down huge. These ideas have huge consequences. Yeah, it might seem like nothing more than a coffee shop debate. It might seem like nothing more than just going back and forth. It just kind of, oh, yeah, that's fun. That's Marx. That's Engels. That's Derrida. That's Foucault. That's Davis. That's Bell. But then what happens when the army can't hit their recruitment goals? In fact, they're down dramatically. What happens when all of a sudden our military is far more focused on diversity, equity, inclusion, social, emotional learning, critical race theory guidelines than they are about killing our enemies and winning wars? We've said for a while the military shouldn't be a social experiment. Well, it is. The statists went from hating the military, spitting on vets, burning flags, wanting to defund the military, to now realizing all they have to do is take it over with their idea pathogens. Every branch of the military that we have numbers for is missing their recruitment goals. Down double-digit percentage. We are just beginning to see the consequences of what these ideas mean, what these insidious principles can do. Okay, let's get to another question here. Charlie, did you see the latest out of AOC? I'm not sure what to make out of it. She's a buffoon, but she has a big following. That's right, she is a fool. So AOC, I only listened to this one passively. Let's listen to this together. In fact, I'm going to be reacting to it. I did see it. I haven't really had a chance to process it. Play cut 127.
But there are quite a few countries that are really struggling because young people, because under the burdens of capitalism and under living under a society that's increasingly concentrating wealth among the rich, we're not having kids, and or we're not having kids at the same rate. And we actually need immigrant populations to help balance things out. We can't continue to fund Social Security, Medicare, all of this stuff without immigrants.
Yeah, she's all over the place. Okay, so first of all, what's so interesting is that AOC is this abortion fanatic, and she's all of a sudden worried about birth rates. She's worried about birth rates, and she's all about trying to intervene with children and terminate them in the womb. That's number one. Secondly, America's fertility rate is collapsing. There's a lot behind this. Declining testosterone rates. Too expensive to have children. Now, she blames that on capitalism. Obviously, it's the opposite. It's her own government policies of inflation and runaway government spending that are making it too unaffordable. And of course, there's some corporate malfeasance involved in that. According to NBC, they're super happy that the fertility rates are falling, according to NBC News. The feminist victory at the heart of America's falling fertility rate. So we have the most depressed, suicidal, anxious generation in history, most psychiatric addicted, and least ability to replicate itself. So when you ask young people, well, first of all, they wait way too long to get married, in my own personal opinion. That's just a separate issue. But this idea of like, oh yeah, go launch a career and then you're going to be super happy on the back end doesn't turn out very well. But that's okay. We got a lot of people that email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. I'm 34. I put my career first and now I can't find anybody. I'm like, yeah, okay, well, that's value what matters first early, maybe. But I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. Whatever you think is best, go do it. But I've seen far too many miserable people filled with regret with a lot of cats and a good corporate job. So look, AOC and says that this is all because of capitalism and that we need immigrants. So wait a second. Let me get this straight. So AOC wants immigrants who bring in socially conservative big family values, while she and her party call the middle part of the country deplorables because they want to have a bunch of kids. We actually predicted this differently. We thought they would do with inflation, and they have in some sense, Durbin and others. But their solution to whatever crisis there is, it's always either immigration, take the guns away, or environmentalism. So declining birth rate, we need more people. Too much crime, take the guns away. It's as if they have the solution before they know the problem. It's as if the left, the solution, I put in air quotes, it's as if they have the policy prescription before they even heard what the problem is. So AOC just hears a problem. More immigrants! Hold on a second. If we didn't have a million abortions a year, how many people would we have exactly, AOC? For every 4 people born in America this year, 3 people have come across the border. And anytime you mention that, they say, oh, that's the great replacement. Shut up, you're a racist. Like, hold on a second. I don't even know what the great replacement is. You obviously do, because they're a bunch of racists. But for 4 people that are born in America, 3 come across the border. What exactly is going on here? We should make it easier to have native-born American children. We've said that before. A family should not have to go into debt to raise children. Unfortunately, having children has become a luxury of the rich. It's much easier not to have children right now. And you're seeing that reflected in this declining civilizational defining issue that our program, alongside very few others, Tucker and Bannon and Elon Musk deserves credit for this, has been trying to warn people. We are hitting a level where the species will be put in jeopardy. That is not a joke. You play this out over a couple generations, it's not good. Email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Frank from Pensacola, Florida. Charlie, many of my friends are suffering from myocarditis. Are the leaders ever going to apologize for the mRNA gene-altering intervention that they pushed on all of us? Well, there's a new advertising that's normalizing myocarditis in children. Play cut 123.
I've been into fashion since I can remember. But one day, I had a stomachache so bad, I didn't want to do anything. The team at New York Presbyterian said it was actually my heart. It was severely swollen. Something called myocarditis. But doctors gave me medicines and used machines to control my heartbeat. They saved me. So now I can become the next great fashion designer.
Normalizing myocarditis. 124, Moderna used to say, there was no incident of myocarditis, and yet we're seeing a very strange uptick in pericarditis and myocarditis. Play cut 124.
See, in summary, and very briefly, the reactogenicity of this vaccine was essentially the same, no better or worse than what we've seen with any of a number of childhood vaccines that we regularly administer to our children. There was no incidence of myocarditis or multi-system inflammatory syndrome of children.
Cut 4, Joe Biden says during an interview on 60 Minutes, he believes the pandemic is over. Does that mean now he's not allowed to cancel student loans? I think it's illegal as it is. Does he now give away all of his emergency powers? Play cut 4.
Is the pandemic over?
The pandemic is over. We still have a problem with COVID. We're still doing a lot of work on it. But the pandemic is over. If you notice, no one's wearing masks. Everybody seems to be in pretty good shape. And so I think it's changing, and I think this is a perfect example of it.
It's all just midterm strategy nonsense. But he doesn't want to give away the emergency use authorization. So if we take back Congress, it'd be a great question. Hey, can you strip away the EUA immediately? Why has Congress not been informed on that? Now, what is important about that? What's important is that under the EUA, these mRNA experimental gene therapies are shielded from liability. This is why they need to get them on the child vaccination schedule. This is why every other country, not every other country, that's not true. Most other countries that we have respect for are removing the mRNA gene altering technology from the childhood vaccination schedule. For example, I don't want to speak inaccurately here, but I believe the United Kingdom has removed it completely for anyone at age of 12. I believe that's true. Now, we would be doing that if it wasn't for this goofy way that we wrote the legislation in our country, where in order for these vaccine companies, these makers, to be shielded from potential legal recourse, to be shielded from a check and balance on the plaintiff's lawyers, they need to get it on the childhood vaccination schedule. So vaccine companies will go bankrupt without the emergency use authorization. Ooh. So Biden admits that the EUA is over. I'm sorry, the pandemic is over. Therefore, the EUA should be over. So somebody should file in federal court using his own language saying that the EUA needs to be stripped away. Not another military member should be kicked out of the military for not having a vaccine. How many people had their wonderful careers obliterated and ruined? In fact, every single person who wants their job back in the military should be hired back with back pay. Donald Trump said that at an event, and I'm glad he said that. It's very important. This is a scandal that if Republicans take over, it's going to be tempting for Republicans not to focus on the vaccine, the approval of vaccine, Operation Warp Speed. And the way they will do it, the Democrats are so clever, and that's why you got to play a step ahead. How do you think they will message a Republican onslaught of an investigation into the vaccine? How do you think they'll do that? The Democrats right now are going to destroy certain documents and place certain documents that blame it on Donald Trump and his White House. That's what they're going to do. They know that if we have a full investigation into this, with the Republicans taking back the Congress, and we should have Nuremberg trials, but it's not going to happen with immediately. It can happen long term. I don't want to say it's not going to happen. Is that they're going to, their last case resort, they're already sprinkling this in the media, is they're going to say it's a Trump's vaccine. It's Trump's vaccine. He rushed it. He went over regulatory hurdles. It's one of the reasons why Senator Ron Johnson so sorely needs to win in the great state of Wisconsin. Senator Johnson has been a bulldog on this issue for transparency, for oversight, and for his voters. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.